This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Earners, what's up? Look, today I want to talk to you about something that's been on my mind, a real weight on my shoulders. You know, we all have these moments, big or small, that just stick with us. When we don't talk about these things, then they can start to affect our lives in unexpected ways. That's why having a space to express these feelings is so important. I know firsthand the benefits of therapy. It's been transformative for my friends and family. Therapy can help you learn crucial skills like setting boundaries and developing coping strategies. It's not just about dealing with major events. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life, allowing you to become the best version of yourself. So if you've been thinking about therapy, BetterHelp can be a great option for you. It's entirely online, which makes it super convenient and adaptable to your busy schedule. You start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And you can even switch therapists at any time if you feel the need without any additional cost. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/earnyourleisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/earnyourleisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now. Earners, what's up? Look, I want to give y'all a little peek behind the curtain of producing Earn Your Leisure. It's a lot more than just sitting down and chatting. It involves meticulous planning, recording, editing, and then promoting each episode to ensure it reaches all of you. And if you picked up any of our merch, then you know there's a whole extra layer of logistics from inventory management to shipping. Running a podcast is like running a small business. And speaking of business, I know many of you entrepreneurs are involved in e-commerce. You understand how crucial it is to streamline operations and cut costs wherever possible. That's why I want to talk to you about ShipStation, the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with all your online sales channels. It's all about optimizing your shipping, connecting with expert partners, and freeing up more of your time to focus on scaling your business. Now let's talk about our experience with ShipStation. This tool has been a game changer for us, especially with automating routine tasks. Being able to manage everything from one dashboard and print shipping labels with just a click, absolute lifesavers. Plus, the discounts we get on shipping costs are incredible. Honestly, it feels like we're saving thousands. And as our show and merch sales have grown, ShipStation's robust automation and reporting features have helped us keep up without missing a beat. For those of you who get overwhelmed by order volumes, ShipStation's easy-to-use dashboard is a dream come true. You can import orders from any sales channel, apply shipping preferences automatically, and handle customer service issues right there. Not to mention the savings with up to 89% off carrier rates like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's no wonder over 130,000 companies stick with ShipStation long term. So, are you ready to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities? Head over to ShipStation.com and use promo code EARN for a free 60-day trial. Again, that's ShipStation.com, promo code EARN. Start streamlining your shipping and scaling your business today.
Even in my book, I wrote this part called $100 Off Days, where my goal is to build my business on my off days, just my off days, because I was working 5 days a week on my job, 2 days a week on my dream. Every single day, my goal is to go out and sell 4 t-shirts. I'm selling t-shirts for $25. So I'm trying to sell 4 t-shirts. I'm trying to make $100 on each off day. So my boy's like, nah, you got to grind, man. You got to work every single day. I know myself. I'm low key lazy. I work hard because I'm kind of lazy. Yeah. I want to get to a point where I don't got to do nothing.
You work smart.
Yeah. I mean,
that's what lazy people say.
Okay. But yeah, my goal is I'm focused on whatever happens throughout the week is extra. But my goal is on my off days, fill it with work. If I can put time into my job, I can put time into my business. So I started hitting these $100 each off day. So I called my boss like, yo, can you only put me on 4 days a week instead of five? Because I knew if I can make $200 on two off days, if I had three off days, I can make 300. Mm-hmm. And that joint started to hit. So long story short, by the time I quit my job, I was like working a day a week. So I like I teach people to transition out of their job. Mm-hmm. Let's set these small goals and build from there.
So can you talk about that? Because that's important as far as, it's all about strategy in life. And it's like, you never just want to jump out the window with anything. So can you break that down a little bit, the transition out of your job? I like that idea.
Was it, like, I'm thinking to myself, like, was there any fear in that? Like, or what, how did that play on your mind? Like, I'm doing this, I'm out.
I don't know. It wasn't really a fear because it happened so gradually. You know what I mean? It's like with this podcast, you drop one episode, then two, then three, and it starts to build. So I'm trying to make on my, just the two, my goal is to make $200 a week. If I can't sell 8 t-shirts in 7 days, you know what I mean? Like, so it wasn't like a fear of, oh, I got to go quit my job. That would be scary. I'm just trying to make a couple more dollars to like go to the club and hang out and put something on a bottle. I still want to go buy it myself, but I want to be a person that can chip in. Yeah. So it wasn't really a fear, especially because since I was a kid, I've always been trying. Mm-hmm. The hard part was sticking when I'm only making $200 a week. Like, or sticking when I'm not really making any money, instead of saying, yo, you know what? I think I'm gonna try real estate because t-shirts don't work. It was just me. So the hard part was just staying in my lane and, you know, just staying one course for a while.
Yeah, it goes back to your, I looked at your page, the life cycle of a good idea.
Yeah.
This sounds like the life
cycle of a good idea. Oh, for sure. Everybody goes through it too.
You know what I mean? Like, can you break down that process? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people that have ideas and they make it to the first stage of excitement, but they never make it to the last stage.
Oh, never. So I came across this presentation. I was on tour with E.T. 2017. And I think like a few hours before I was supposed to turn in my presentation, I was like, yo, I got it. The life cycle of a good idea is excitement. Everybody gets excited about the idea, but then you got to move to evolution, where you got to start evolving the idea, which is not as exciting as when you got the idea and you get to tell everybody and you see the vision. Yo, this goal was taking me out of my job. So excitement, then evolution, then engagement. So after you evolve it, you got to engage people. That gets scary. Because you got to actually approach people and make a sale.
And try to get them to buy in.
You got to get people to buy in. Yeah. But then with engagement comes resistance. You'll automatically have those people to say, yo, I don't want to buy it. And then you have to make a decision. And the decision is either get excited about something else or move into expansion. But the trick is taking each stage with you. So if you're excited and you move to evolution, you got to be excited while you're evolving the idea. And some people move from evolution to engagement, but they stop evolving the content. Mm. So once you start to hit resistance, if you're still engaging people and evolving, you're asking people, okay, why aren't you buying this? Because you're still evolving it. You're still trying to get better, meaning you're still engaging.
You're assessing it.
Yeah. And then you make a decision to just don't get excited about something else, fight through it, take all that data, get re-excited about the same concept, retool it, keep engaging, go through the resistance, and then you expand.
You said something important, and Shadi comes from a sales background, and you come from a sales background. You said a sale starts when somebody says no.
Oh, for sure.
In my mind, I'm like, yeah, somebody says no, I was next to the next person. what's the importance of that? Like, what's the philosophy behind that?
I mean, when you go into a shoe store, obviously somebody comes up to you and they're like, can I help you? And you always say, no, I'm good. Like, we're trained to say no.
Yeah.
The game starts when they say no first. So I was expecting, yo, you want to buy this t-shirt? And they say no. I'm like, all right, man, well, I got to go to the next person. But then I realized that one of my mentors said, yo, make them tell you no twice. So I'm like, yo, would you like to buy this t-shirt? And they say, nah, I'm good. And I'm like, yo, are you sure? Look at this. Like, look at that. Like, this would be dope with your shoes. And for some reason, I started converting. Like, people like, oh, all right, yeah, you're right. Let me get it. Right, so now, you know, fast forward, I was able to leave the Cheesecake Factory and jump into the kiosk. I make you tell me no till you walk away. Because, yo, I've converted on the third sale, the third no, the fourth no. And sometimes people will buy because they tired of you asking and they know you're not gonna let them go. Look, I got some, all right, cool, just give me that one, here.
Take it.
Make them tell you no more than once.
Yeah, now the sales is, we talked about that a few times on the podcast. It's something that most people are extremely afraid of because nobody likes to talk to strangers. Like, we're conditioned as kids not to talk to strangers. That's the first thing they tell you, don't talk to strangers. And that carries over as an adult. And it's like to walk up to somebody, especially to try to ask them to buy a product and to spend money with you, is like, is terrifying for most people. But I always say, like, if you can actually do sales, I recommend anybody that wants to be in business to do at least 1 year of sales.
Oh yeah,
selling something. I don't care whether it's life insurance, whether it's knives, whether it's cell phone cases. You gotta be able to sell something. Because if you could sell something, A, it takes a fear away.
Yeah,
and you'll realize that the worst thing in the world is not a no.
Yeah,
right. It's not like people say no, you're still living. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like,
sure,
you got to develop thick skin to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I got a client. Shouts out to my man, Sam. He came on our coaching call. Like, I have a call in the mornings. And he said, man, how do I take my business to the next level? And my question was like, yo, how many people do you ask to buy your service? He said, man, not that many. I said, yo, how, give me a number. Like, how many people do you actually ask? He said, well, not a whole lot. But bro, how many did you ask yesterday? He said, none. I said, that's the problem. So this is what I want you to do, because he's afraid to ask for the sale. Mm-hmm. I said, or he's afraid to attend. He's afraid to like get into sales. But what I told him was, I just want you to ask three people a day. That's your goal. I don't care whether they buy or not, because the pressure is in their answer. And but if you condition your mind to say, yo, my goal is not to make a sale. My goal is to just ask five people every day. So I can go to the store and say, yo, I don't want to bother you. My coach make me do this. Would you like to buy this t-shirt? Okay, that's one. Hey, mom, I know I ain't talked to you in a little while. I never tried to sell you anything, yeah. But let me get my number out. And if you can start to get your number out, three sales, five, just make five calls. Make your goal the work, not the reward, because the reward is scary, because if you don't get it, you're disappointed. But what you can control is the work. That's the only thing you can control.
Mm. So is there is like a fine line between persistence and annoyance? Because I could imagine like, yo, get this. And it's like, all right, is there a fine line there?
To make a sale, you got to be kind of annoying a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to ask her. It's going to be somebody you want to get on the podcast. They say no. Next time you see him, you need to ask him again. It's only our inside. We feel like we're being annoying.
Yeah.
But sometimes people just forget. And I learned this at the Cheesecake Factory. So dope. People want to, but they want to eat cheesecake, but they want you to convince them. They want to do it, but the right thing to say is no, because it's high in fat calories. But they really want me to ask. They really want me to convince. They feel good, strong will, because they're saying no because they're on a diet.
Yeah, we got this new one.
Oh, for sure. They'll be happy when I convince them.
No, it's the no thing is extremely important. And it's important for people to understand, not to take things personal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, living in New York, I was on the subway years ago, and I just did like an observation. It's like people, these guys handing out like free newspaper. They're free to anybody that's like coming through the turnstile. And every single person was like, no, I'm good. I'm thinking to myself, like, it's free. It's a free newspaper.
Right.
Why not take it? But it's like they're just conditioned that he's trying to sell me. He's not even trying to sell. He's giving it away.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's like the same thing. It's like a pretty girl. Like, you might want to dance with a pretty girl, and before you even, she's like, no. But it's like, you didn't even look at me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But she's just used.
Yeah.
She's conditioned to say no. So yeah. I say, I have to say, like, people in general are conditioned to say no. So peeling back that layer and saying, like, well, why? It's free. It's a free newspaper. Why do you want to take it? Like, yeah. let me.
Just get the no out of the way.
And you're not going to convince everybody, but some people, once you just get that first layer, like, if you can get past that first layer, it's like a home run after that.
Yeah. I think how you do anything is how you do everything. So if you're attempting to make a sale and they say no, if you're working on a product and you just can't figure it out, like these mics, you just couldn't figure out how to get it working, you'll probably stop at that too and just get another mic, right? But once you develop a certain level of persistence, once you develop that trait, that carries to everything. You know what I mean? Like if you can be persistent in a sales transaction, you could be persistent in getting that person interested in enough to date you or trying to close that deal. I believe how you do anything is how you do everything.
You sound like you're going to be the host on Bachelor, man.
So what are some steps, like you said, you coach people to become entrepreneurs from their 9-to-5. What are some steps? I'm sure there's a lot of people that may listen to this podcast that have 9-to-5 jobs and want to become entrepreneurs. Like, what are some practical steps that people can take?
I think the first step is just set a goal. And I don't care what the goal is. Ideally, if you're new in entrepreneurship, you don't want to set a sales goal or a reward goal. You want to set a work goal. So your work goal might be starting out from 6 to 7 every single day, I'm going to work on this product. Or this project, whatever it is I'm doing, from 6 to 7. If you got a podcast, from 6 to 7, I'm reaching out to people to be on my, I don't care what they say. Their answer doesn't have anything to do with me, but for me to hit my goal from 6 to 7, because that works on consistency. You get more comfortable reaching out and you're putting a whole bunch of people in your pipeline. This for this particular scenario, I guess, with podcasting, but the first step is to set a consistent goal that you can hit. Because you can't control if somebody buys or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I think the first step is, if you have a business, you set some work goals. And out of those work goals, if you get comfortable in that long enough, then you set some small reward goals and you just do that consistently. My goal is to sell one a day, whatever the product is. Let me just sell one a day. And you do that often enough, you'll get tired of that.
Now, you know what? I'm glad you said that, because that's something that I learned early on in business when I was first came into business, right? And I learned that you can't, people make the mistake all the time because they say, okay, I want to make $100,000. And in order to do that, I need to make $2,000 a week, right? And it's like, okay, I'm going to make $2,000 a week. I'm not going to work 2 weeks out of the year. So if I make $2,000 for 50 weeks, I'll make $100,000. But that's not really an attainable goal, because it's like, what does it take to make $2,000 a week, right?
And you don't know. Exactly. You've never done it.
So yeah. It's like, if you're selling a product, right, you might say, okay, I need to sell 10 of these, whatever they are, in order to make $2,000.
Right.
But even saying, all right, I'm going to sell 10 products, that's really not a good goal, because how are you going to sell 10 products? You got to dig deeper to say, okay, in order to sell 10 products, I know I need to speak to 100 people.
Exactly.
So the goal is not to sell 10 products. The goal is to speak to 100 people.
Exactly.
So now you dig it down even deeper and it's like, okay, well, how do I speak to 100 people? I need to get 25 referrals. Mm-hmm. I need to go to 5 networking events. Mm-hmm. I need to cold call 100 people. Yep. That's the formula for me to speak. My goal is to, if I speak to 100 people, I'm going to sell 10 products. I'm going to make 2,000. But a lot of times people do it backwards.
Yeah.
They say, I'm going to make 2,000. They get frustrated because it's June and they haven't made any money.
Right.
And it's like, they just quit.
Yeah, the question is like, how long did you think it was going to take to be successful? Right.
Kanye West, that's
our brother. We can't throw him away.
Yeah, Kanye West. You went to his concert.
I go to a lot of. I've been to a number of his concerts. I remember the first time I saw him, he was opening up for Usher on a Confessions tour. Yeah. That's how far back I've been.
Well, you went to his most recent concert.
Yeah, I was at the
in LA. Jesus is King.
We told that story on live. Yeah, I went to Sunday Service, man.
Yeah, he went to Sunday Service.
It was a moment.
Because we was at ComplexCon. Me, Mike, Jamal, you, we was at ComplexCon in LA in Long Beach.
Yeah.
And he had his show and you brought tickets to the show for all of us.
Yeah, man.
And
good guy.
You was about to go. It was in Inglewood and you got in the Uber and nobody else got in.
Yo, listen, let's paint this picture. It was like 3:00. I'm like, yo, the show starts at 4:00. Like, I'm calling this Uber right now, guys. It's a 45-minute ride to Inglewood. Y'all coming with me? Everybody's like, I was like, I'm calling the Uber. We all walked outside. I got in the Uber, I looked back, I saw y'all standing on the curb. I said, listen, I'm closing this door. This is gonna be a one-man journey. And I looked, and y'all took 2 steps backwards, and I closed the door, and I said, I'm going.
Yeah, nah, it was a fact. Shout out to Kanye, no disrespect, yeah.
They left me, y'all.
Just wasn't in the vibe, just, you gotta be mentally prepared for that.
And I'm not mad at it. I told you, I doubled back, I came back, I was like, you know what, some things you need to experience by yourself. I needed that, man. It was an emotional moment. So
yeah,
shout out to Sunday Service.
Shout out to, you went by yourself. But shout out to ComplexCon too, that was a dope event. But I say that to say, we're gonna talk about Virgil Abloh.
Yeah.
Right? And Virgil, if you don't know, he just recently took the head job at
the head designer of Louis Vuitton.
Yeah. I think the men's line of Louis Vuitton, right?
Yeah, maybe.
And yeah, so he's big in fashion, obviously.
Yeah.
But before that, he's has a brand called Off-White.
Yep.
Off-White, if you're not familiar, is huge. It's one of these things where all of the rappers wear it, all of the athletes wear it, and it costs $1,000 for a t-shirt. It's crazy. It's like, Off-White is like a thing.
It's definitely a thing.
I mentioned Kanye West because Virgil comes from Kanye's tree. So when we talk about Kanye's tree, we talk about his musical tree, mm-hmm. right? People that have come from him.
Mm-hmm.
So the Big Sean's of the world.
John Legend.
The John Legends of the world.
Kid Cudi
the
influence.
Kid Cudi's of the world.
Yeah.
These are all people that come from Kanye's tree.
We can put Drake in there.
No, we can't put Drake in there.
Got to.
No, we can't play with Drake like that. But so shout out to the Six Guard. So that's OD. So but music is crazy. His branches is crazy in music. But even more impressive is his fashion.
Yeah.
So people,
probably, that, I would say more impressive.
The people who come from under Kanye in fashion is Jerry Lorenzo.
Yeah, Fair God.
Fair of God. Yep. Virgil Abloh, who we just spoke
obviously
about.
Obviously Off-White, yep. Don C.
Don C, yeah. Who worked the Jordan brand.
Yep.
And what else did he do?
He still has it. And he has the RSVP shop.
Yeah, yeah.
He has a couple of deals. He did a deal with the NBA where he licensed some of their stuff.
Yeah, Don C's,
Don C's dope.
And Virgil and Kanye actually moved to
the all of them. They all
literally
of them.
For like 6 months, and they interned
at Louis Vuitton.
So it's crazy. So all right,
the Louis Vuitton Don actually
Louis Vuitton Don. It. Yeah, he got his whole name from that whole vibe. So what happens? Okay, so Virgil starts a company called Off-White, right? Mm-hmm. And Off-White blows up. Off-White becomes a really big thing.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, like I said, where everybody's just, it's like you got to get an Off-White shirt.
Well, it started before. Like, he built the buzz because he had that there was like this Pyrex vision, that fashion line that he had done. But he was putting it on other pieces of clothing. So you might see a Champion sweatshirt, but it had like the Pyrex stuff on it. So Pusha T, obviously, that made sense, right? He's part of that crew, that conglomerate, that Kanye conglomerate. So they was wearing it. And then that Pyrex became a big thing. Like, Jay wears it, now it's big. And then somebody saw the light in him.
Yeah, that's a fact. So Marcelo Braun, that's his name?
Berlon.
Marcelo.
Yeah, you got it.
Marcelo Berlon recruits him to come to Italy, right? And so he owns the New Guard Group.
Yeah, him and, he has two partners. Yeah.
Which is a fashion conglomerate, mm-hmm. right? So he takes him to Italy and he shows him their manufacturing factories. Like, so yeah, we start laughing because it's like when Kanye was on Sway and he was like,
"You don't got the answer."
He was talking and nobody really understood what he was talking about, and he was like, "I can't produce at this level. I can't produce." And they're like, "Why would you, like, what are you talking about?" And he's like, "You don't got the answer, Sway.
They only gonna give us t-shirts and hats."
And so he's like, and even Charmaine was like, nobody really knew what he was talking about. He didn't really do a good job of explaining what he was talking about, but he was just saying, like, he didn't have the factories to produce.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't go over well, right?
That sounds about accurate.
But it's crazy because it's like when Virgil, they said when he went there and he saw the factories, I don't know what these factories, it's like magical, it's like Willy Wonka in the chocolate factory. Yeah. So he saw these factories and he realized that he couldn't compete.
Yeah, he said it was a no-brainer.
Get down, lay down type vibe. So he sells his company. And you know what's crazy is that, shout out to Dapper Dan, but when Dapper Dan was on The Breakfast Club, that's what really started this whole vibe. Because Dapper Dan was on The Breakfast Club,
shout out to Dapper Dan,
and Charlamagne kept pushing him, like, "Yo, why don't you just own your own joint? Like, why are you working for Gucci?
You've done so much for this company. You brought streetwear and couture together. Like, create your own thing.
Why don't you create your own thing?" So then he kept pushing him on that, and then Dap was like, "Well, what black designer owns their own outright, like on a high level, on a very high level?" And he was like, Off-White, Virgil. And then he was like, Does he? So then Charlamagne was like, "Well, what does that mean? What are you saying?" He's like, "I'm not saying anything." He's like, "Do your research."
I promise you. Like, as soon as I saw that.
And then 1 week later, this whole story comes out.
I was like, "Yo, I'm doing the research." And then we found this. I'm like,
surprise. It turns out that he doesn't own Off-White. New Guard Group owned Off-White, right?
A majority stake. Yeah.
So what happens is that he sold it to the New Guard Group. All right, it happens all the time. People sell their company. But what makes this interesting is that he still has control over it in a certain way because he kept the licensing, right?
Yeah.
So this is very important. This is where the story gets interesting. So he sold the company to the New Guard Group, but he kept the licensing rights.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is that New Guard was in control of development, distribution, mm-hmm. and manufacturing.
Yep.
So they
pretty much everything,
right? but he was in control of licensing. So in order for them to put it in any store or to sell it effectively, they have to rent the licensing rights from him.
Mm-hmm.
And then they split. They didn't say what their agreement was as far as the split, but they split. Let's just say hypothetically a 50-50 split. And so he still makes money, but he's not actually doing anything, which actually works out for him because he could focus his energy on running Louis Vuitton.
Yeah, and that's the beautiful thing about licensing and trademarking is that he can do it with this one. And right now, this deal that he has with New Guard, and we'll talk about who they sold it to, is that this one's exclusive. But the next time, and like we said, we don't know the terms of the money in the contract. We don't know the terms of the years either. But as soon as this deal's done, he can license to New Guard, he can license to this person. He could, I mean, he could do it as many times or with whoever he wants.
So the licensing thing is extremely, it's an interesting conversation, especially when it comes to fashion, because people don't fully understand, like, you know who's huge in fashion?
Tell him.
Disney.
Yeah.
You never really think about it like this. And shout out to Prince Darnell, another EYL alumni. Yeah. He was in a store, I think, like a month ago, and he did a whole Instagram clip about this. But Disney licensed their characters out
all the time,
especially fashion. They're real big in fashion. So we talked about, like, back in the day with Iceberg,
mm-hmm.
with
Goofy, yeah,
with Goofy,
yeah.
And Goofy was on all the sweaters.
Yeah,
they're not using Goofy just saying I want to use Goofy.
Yeah,
no, you can't do that.
It's a selling it.
You gotta license it.
Yeah, they had Mickey too. I remember the sweater Mickey had the wand. So they had Mickey, they had Goofy, Peanuts. They also licensed that, but it's like they have to pay to use those characters.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, like, so when you go in the mall, because you see, especially now it's holiday time, you see a bunch of shirts with Snoopy, Mickey Mouse, especially Mickey Mouse.
Yeah,
Mickey
all
Mouse,
over.
Minnie Mouse. They're huge. You never really paid attention, right? But if you go and you look at the tag, they're not going to say Disney.
Right. You could go in Old Navy right now and find a Mickey Mouse t-shirt.
Yeah.
Or Urban Outfitters.
And all of these different companies that put those characters on it, they have to pay Disney.
Yeah.
Right? So they license their characters out on fashion. They license other stuff out too.
They license, like, music.
Yeah. Netflix.
Right.
Like,
and
before,
movies.
Before they started their own streaming service, all of the Marvel catalog was on Netflix.
Right.
Netflix is paying Disney
big money
to use that.
It's the
right?
reason why now, like with Disney Plus, that all like Black Panther's not on Disney Plus yet, or like Star Wars: The New Hope is not on Disney Plus yet, because the licensing agreement hasn't run out. As soon as it does, that'll be on Disney Plus. Netflix will never see another Disney product.
Yeah, so it's the same thing with fashion, and some of your top favorite designers, they don't own.
Right. Yeah, it's like
You think they do.
Because
it's the name.
Yeah.
But larger corporations like the New Guard Group,
mm-hmm.
they own it, right? So this happens all the time. Also, we talked about as far as even in real estate.
Mm.
So Trump.
There's a guy.
Donald Trump.
New York City, you know, like, especially maybe 10 years prior to today, when you drove down the West Side Highway, it was nothing but buildings that said Trump Tower, Trump Tower, Trump Tower, Trump Tower. He doesn't own the building, the land itself. He just licensed his name to put on the building, which in turn people associate with a lifestyle. It's like, this is high luxury. I'm living in the Trump Tower. I have money. I have high luxury. There's a certain lifestyle that comes with it.
Yeah, he did. He did that probably the best, honestly. Yeah. I mean, hate it or love it, but you got to always look at a business case study. Right, you gotta take emotions out when you're looking at business. Mm-hmm. So whether, you know, politics is very divisive. So whether you love them, whether you hate them, whatever, you gotta look at the business model behind it. Right, like all of this stuff from his ties, a lot of his golf courses, all of those buildings, those Trump Tower. Very few of those does he actually own.
The casino too.
He licensed his name. People pay him because he built the brand around Trump, the name Trump. And now it's like, okay, just the name on itself, I can make money via value.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what makes the Virgil deal interesting, because it's like, okay, like we said, people sell their companies all the time. We talked about Kylie Jenner recently selling 51% of her company. So he sold the company, but he also is making money on the back end because he licensed it, right?
Yeah. That's one of the things they said, especially in fashion, if anyone's trying to start something. Owning the trademark is probably the most valuable thing you can have in fashion, because that lives on forever. Like this lease agreement that you might have, eventually they're renting, but that lives on forever. As soon as that agreement is done, you can find 7 different partners to now license with, and then that lives on in perpetuity. It's like, keep that. You know what he does? He owns his masters. We always talk about music.
Yeah.
Virgil owns his masters.
But now what happens is that, so New Guard Group gets brought.
Mm.
So what happens, okay, so Virgil has a deal with New Guard Group, right? And he sells him a large percentage of the company, but he keeps the licensing agreement, right? They do all of the work. They manufacture it, they distribute it, they do everything. He gets paid, and they have a good relationship,
mm-hmm.
I'm assuming, right? But now New Guard Group gets brought by G3, which is another fashion conglomerate company. Yeah. So now, this is where it becomes a little complicated, because it's like, okay, it's like a record label. We had Mickey Fax on, we saying he got dropped by one record label, or his record label got acquired by another record label. Right. So it's like, you might have a good understanding with an executive at RCA, but now
Sony bought you.
Yeah. So now it's a whole different, you know, relationship. Yeah. So it's the same thing with this, right? So it's like, okay, you might not be on the same page, right? Because now you got the company that you sold it to got acquired.
Right.
So I'm assuming that, you know, obviously Virgil is seasoned and I'm assuming he has good counsel and he's around good people that's giving him good advice and he's knowledgeable himself. So now what you do is you put a termination clause in.
Yeah, a termination provision, really. So it's like, what that means is like, if a brand or if the company decides to put out stuff that does not represent the brand any further, then he has the right to say, you know what? We don't want to do business anymore. Since you've sold it, the company, and we lost our agreement, if you can't match what we are expectations going forward, if we're not a high luxury brand and going forward, we end up in like a TJ Maxx or something, our deal's terminated.
Yeah, it's very important. So that's very important because you always gotta, I always give the analogy of like when you go to the movies, like before a movie starts, they always say like, this is the exit.
Right, when you right,
get
right,
on
right,
a,
right.
When you get on a plane, before the plane takes off, they tell you where the exit rows are and they tell you like the procedure, like if an emergency happens, right? So if you really on point, but when you go to any building, you always gotta recognize the exit before you, cause it's like getting out is more important than getting in.
Mm-hmm.
You have to identify the exit, preferably before you even get in.
Right.
Because you don't want to get somewhere and you don't know. Then you got to kind of like walk around the room, where's the exit? So if you like presidents, right? They already mapped out the exit strategy
before they
actually get in. That's the Secret Service's job.
That's a fact.
So in business, it's no different. Before you do a deal, you got to figure out the exit strategy.
Yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't go bad, but you always got to think, what if it does, right? It's like getting a prenuptial agreement when you get married.
What's that?
Well, hopefully you never have to use it, but just in case, 50% chance that it, you know, it doesn't work out, you know, you got your walking papers already established. So that's extremely important for entrepreneurs, man. And this is a very high level case, but any level of businessship, partnership, whenever you are doing business with somebody, you always got to have an exit built in, because if not, now you get screwed.
Yeah, you're gonna get stuck or dropped.
Yeah. And G3, so they also own Donna Karan, right?
Yeah.
So the Donna Karan story is interesting as well, because
that's like the flip side of the Virgil situation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like, she didn't license her name.
Right. She didn't license her name, and she got acquired. She actually got acquired by LVMH.
LVMH. Shout out to Wall Street Trapper. We talked about that in episode 40. LVMH.
And they just 44. Did a deal with Tiffany's. They just bought Tiffany's for $16 billion.
LVMH, one of the largest companies in the world.
The largest. High fashion, high luxury.
Well, one of the largest.
Yeah, well.
Apple's the largest.
Right. I'm talking about fashion.
Oh, fashion. Yeah, sure. So LVMH, as I said, we talked about that in episode 44 of Wall Street Trapper. Yeah. But they own Louis Vuitton, Hennessy, Moet, a bunch of different stuff. Yeah. Tiffany's now.
Yeah.
They own a long list of high fashion and just high lifestyle items. Yeah. So she sold her company to them in 2000 for $450 million.
That's a lot of money.
But that took her out the game, right? But they still use her name.
Yeah, she sold her brand and her entity. So Donna Karan International, which encompasses DKNY and everything else that comes with Donna Karan.
Yeah. But now, so they sold it to G3, another G3 acquirer, in 2015 for $650 million.
So they made 200.
So they made 200 mil.
But during that process, like when they sell it, she steps down. Right, so she steps down from her position. I think when she sold it to LVMH, she stayed on as head designer. 2015, she steps down. So now she has nothing to do with the brand.
No, she's done. And but the brand still makes money.
The brand is super profitable. Right? Yeah. Like last year, I think $570 million in profit. She gets none of it. And she has no say in a brand that has her name. It's like she could walk into any store and say Donna Karan, and it's like, wait, they made that and she could do nothing, even though it has her name on it. She can't use it.
That's interesting because, like I said, a lot of times people don't fully understand, like when they just see headlines in the news. But these are things that I think any entrepreneur can learn from, because it's like, okay, he sold, it's a very savvy move that he did where he sold the company, but he kept the licensing rights, right? So now he's still going to make money in perpetuity as long as he keeps that agreement.
Mm-hmm. The next deal is going to be silly.
And yeah, as long as the company keeps growing.
Yeah, which
now he can renegotiate next time and get even more.
Yeah, because like, and that's the thing. It's like when you see, this is an exclusive deal. So like you'll see Off-White, like they just did the IKEA drop. Did you see that? They put the Off-White IKEA furniture.
Nah, I heard about it.
It was crazy. So like that sells out like that. Like the brand just grows. Once this deal is over, whenever it is, like can you imagine the lineup of people who are coming to knock on that door to use the licensing? It's going to be ridiculous. He could do it. Like right now, it's exclusive, so he can only use through New Guard. But I can't imagine like what's gonna happen when he's a free agent. And it's like, yo, who wants to use the license? He's gonna be out of this world.
Yeah, you know. Sometimes you get paid on front and the back end.
Yeah, man. And the Louis Vuitton stuff is moving crazy.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact. So yeah, we gotta get him more Earn Your Leisure.
That's a fact. Make it happen, y'all. Shout out to Earners, get on it. We gotta make that happen.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.